Welcome to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined as always in the office today by Paul Hoynes, our Tribe beat writer. Paul, good to see you in person for the first time since the end of the playoffs, the Tribe's run. I guess we're getting the band back together.
I had to come in to learn a new system. You just showed it to me, Joe, so I'm glad you're here.
We have no problem teaching old dogs new tricks. It's difficult. It'll benefit us down the road. But, hey, the hot stove season is sort of watch and see mode as the World Series kicked off last night. Yeah. With the Red Sox defeating the Los Angeles Dodgers in Game 1. I don't want to talk about the World Series. When the Tribe's not in the World Series, when the Tribe's not been knocked out of the playoffs, I don't want to talk about the game or the players or anything like that.
The one thing that jumped out of me, they loved Eduardo Nunez. Mm-hmm. The Indians did. I think they tried to get him.
Yep.
And he comes off the bench and it's a three-run homer. That's all I was thinking about last night.
Everything just goes back to guys that the Indians couldn't get or didn't get or whatever. So moving beyond just the games and all that, let's talk about our favorite thing to talk about, speculate about, and that's the Indians and what moves they need to make, could make, won't make in the offseason. And what we really wanted to focus on today was the outfield as its potential for next season. Who could be there are going to be changes there significantly. I think the starting outfield last year was Brantley in left, Zimmer in center, and Chisenhall in right. And I don't think any of those guys are going to be around at all
on opening day, at least.
Let's start obviously in the biggest spot in left field with Michael Brantley. Chances are pretty strong that he's going to leave the Indians in free agency, even if they offer him the qualifying offer. I don't think that's beneficial for either side for him to take. So what could be an option there in left?
Well, Terry Francona in the end of the season review kind of dropped Jason Kipnis's name. I thought he was kidding. If they don't make any other moves, if they don't trade Kipnis, he's an option there, and you could, keep Yandy Diaz at third base and keep Ramirez at second and go from there. I wonder if Jason could play a full year in the outfield. It's interesting.
And it goes back to one of the things that Francona said when they moved Kipnis to the outfield at the end of the season again for the second year in a row this past season was, is he the best option for the Indians there? Is Jason Kipnis, a healthy Jason Kipnis who's not mired in a, hitting below 200 slump for the first half of the year, is a healthy Jason Kipnis the best option for the Indians in left field, looking at the state of the franchise in terms of prospects and, trade availability or anything like that? Is he the best thing that they can do is stick him out there and go with it?
Yeah, well, I personally, I think, I don't know. I think you could put him out there if he's going to hit like he did in the second half. You could live with whatever, defensive shortcomings he has. And I think I'd like him a little much better in left than I do in center. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a shorter throw. He doesn't have to cover as much ground. The ball obviously will come at him differently. But I think he's shown he's a good enough athlete to adjust. But I still think they're going to try hard to trade him during the winter. I really do.
And we'll get to the whole trade aspect of this, sort of thing in a few minutes here. But let's move over to center. You've got Leonis Martin. Obviously, he played, a dozen games for them before the infection and his season ending. And you've got Greg Allen, who really came on in the second half of the season, and late in the season, as he got the opportunity to play a little more regularly. A platoon situation there for the two of them? Martin cannot hit against right-handed pitching.
Yeah, and it was interesting to listen to what Antonetti had to say. Martin's eligible for arbitration last year, I think, and he kind of, I got the impression that they were thinking about maybe non-tendering him mm-hmm. and trying to work out a deal on the side, you know, a deal before he becomes a free agent. If they non-tender him, he's a free agent. So I was right. That was interesting to me. I wondered, you know, where that's going to end up. And we also don't know. I mean, we haven't seen this guy play since, what, August?
Right.
When he got sick. And, you know, they expect him to be back in full strength in spring training, but... Let's wait and see. We've heard that before.
And if he does, you know, things work out and contracts work out and health works out, if he's able to come back and play, he is a really good defensive option there in center field. He's certainly an upgrade over Kipnis, and he and Greg Allen would give you a pretty decent defensive rotation out there in center.
And then you still got Zimmer waiting in the wings, depending on, you know, how that shoulder heals and... But this is a guy that, what, you know, he went down, I can't remember, in July, end of
right,
July. And hurt his shoulder and hasn't played since. You know, he's played like one game or two games for AAA Columbus before getting hurt, had surgery, and, you know, they think he's going to play the bulk of the season in 2019. But, you know, where does he fit? I mean, I think, you know, the reason they sent him down in the first place was kind of the, you know, to... get him to find out what kind of hitter he was. Mm-hmm. If he was going to strike out 190 times, he's got to hit more than 10 home runs.
Right.
He's got to be, you know, he's got to adjust his swing and kind of become an all or nothing hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a lot of people say that's he didn't hit anything up here when
right.
he was here, but
it was mostly nothing.
Yeah, but you know, so that's an interesting kind of sidelight as well.
Yeah, as far as Zimmer goes, I think what you found with Allen and what you acquired with Martin sort of might give you the luxury of being able to take your time with Zimmer. And if he needs to spend a chunk of time in AAA next year to sort of find himself, like you said, maybe that's not the worst thing because you also give that shoulder time to heal. One of the things that really stood out about Bradley Zimmer was, you know, before the injury was his ability to throw. He was a threat to any base runner. He was keeping guys at first, playing balls one hop off the wall. I mean, his arm was a plus weapon out there in the outfield. It's not, no matter what, after the surgery, he's going to come back. It's not going to be the same.
Yeah.
So
that's good. That's a good point. And, you know, he's got speed. He can, you know, a great defender. And, you know, gets on base. He's, you know, he's a lot like Allen. He can steal bases.
Right.
You know, so, you know, there's a lot to like, but he's got to get on base first.
Right. And that's the thing is, His OPS needs to be way higher than it necessarily was. Move over to right field. Lonnie Chisenhall just couldn't stay healthy. Couldn't stay out there on the field. I don't imagine him. You know,
no,
being
I don't
somebody,
think he'll be back. I mean, unless like a bargain basement guy. You know, you bring him to spring training on a
right.
on a minor league deal. I don't know.
Somebody out there is going to pay him.
Yeah.
to come and just. Take a shot
come
at
camp,
him.
Yeah.
Because when he was healthy the last two seasons, he actually did hit.
Yeah, he was a productive guy.
But he just couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah.
And that God bless him, he's at the position right now in his career where he can go out and make some money and whatever. But I don't see him back in right, so that gives you Tyler Naquin, who came back from injury and really sort of, I think he left an impression on Tito with his sort of commitment to getting back and the work that he put in to do that. So, you know, Tito speaks pretty highly of him in that regard. Now, whether you can put him out there and live with what he's going to do at the plate, you know, over the first couple of months of the season, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I talked to him when he came back. He said he started wearing glasses. He got his eyes checked. And his eyes, they weren't that... I mean, something was... He didn't have great vision. So, he said he started seeing the ball better.
I saw him in the clubhouse.
Yeah, he looks like Clark Kent, didn't he?
No, he looked like Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn with the glasses. Like, I thought that was a joke.
No, that
wasn't like a disguise. That was actually...
His eyes improved, so...
Oh, jeez.
So he said, he had the bad hip, and then he said, I wasn't really picking the ball up well.
Well, there you go. And I also saw him, you know, zipping around underneath the Progressive Field, underneath the event level with in one of those carts, stolen somebody's car. Yeah, so like driving around like a madman, like Jose Ramirez on Mario Kart. But yeah, really, those glasses. I thought it was like just being stylish or something like that. But no, he genuinely needs glasses.
That's what he told me. Now, I don't,
that would explain a lot.
But another guy, Brandon Barnes, is a guy that maybe kind of fits in the plan. But you know, when you talk about all these guys, Joey, you know, you're talking about third and fourth outfielders to me. I don't see it. You know, is there a guy that can carry him like Brantley did?
Well, you've also got Brandon Guyer, who's got a $3 million option that the team could. And we'll find out here in a few days, you know, whether the team is going to pick up that option or not. The two players that are eligible with contract options are Carlos Carrasco, who's a no-brainer. You've got to pick that option up for $9.5 million. And then Brandon Guyer, who's the $3 million. If you bring back Guyer on $3 million, he's your right fielder. He's your starting right fielder, and he's going to have to play a lot.
Yeah, I mean, but can he? I mean, the guy hasn't been healthy for 2 years.
But if you're paying him $3 million to be, if this team is paying him $3 million, it's to be out there and play right field.
I would think. And I mean, they could. I mean, you could platoon maybe. I don't know, but
you're not going to platoon Brandon Guyer at $3 million. Brandon Guyer is a platoon guy. He's your left hand. He's starting against lefties, but you're going to have to throw him out there against a few right handers.
Yeah, I would think
for $3 million, you have to. And we talk like $3 million, like the Yankees could pick him up for $3 million and sit him on the bench to only hit against lefties, but. You know, that's not who the Indians are. That's not, you know, where they are in the economic hierarchy of the game. And I can't believe I'm using phrases like that. real quickly before we get to some questions from our lovely listeners, talk about, we touched on possibility of trades, and Kipnis's name is going to come up. And that's that. I don't think the team is shying away from the fact that, you know, they're going to try and trade. He's due $14 million this year.
A little over.
He's due $14 million this year, 2019, and then in 2020, the Indians have a $2.5 million buyout for him. So I think if they get to that point, the buyout is going to be a no brainer. But I personally don't see Kipnis with the club reaching that point. I don't think they get to that point with him. I think he's either, you know, traded or other before then. In order to trade him, they're going to have to attach a pretty high value prospect.
Yeah.
Because another team is going to take on that money in order to get that
prospect. Or maybe they absorb, you know, they take most of the Indians, you know, absorb most of the contract. I don't know how that would work.
And that might be a situation where he starts the season with the team, plays a couple of months, and then gets traded either before the deadline or well before the deadline. But to his credit, I think Kipnis has really sort of handled all of this. Knowing that he's been on the block for as long as he has been, his attitude, and he's saying all the right things publicly. I mean, we know that in the clubhouse, and you know, after the microphones and the TV cameras go off, you know, he'll have his little quips or whatever about it, and the situation is what it is. And you know, he'd rather just be playing and being the everyday second baseman. He'd also rather be hitting above .230.
Sure.
But you know, that wasn't the case this year. So I was at the ballpark when he's, you know, tossing his shoes to the fans and interacting that way. I think he really does enjoy that. I think he's sincere about wanting to make things work here, but I think he's at the point in his career where it's either, if he doesn't go out there and hit .320 next year,
he's going to have a good year, definitely, one way or the other.
It would really behoove him to start off the season hot at the plate. And make decisions difficult for Francona and Antonetti.
And
Francona and Antonetti would be the first ones to tell you that they would love to see him do that in order to make those decisions difficult.
Yeah, I mean, and so we'll see what happens with him. You know, I mean, I think it'll be easier to trade him with just one guaranteed year left. When you know they came close last year to trade him last winter, but I think the 2 years on his contract kind of held that up.
All right, let's jump into some questions. I know the folks on Twitter and through some emails send us some pretty crazy. Can we just avoid all the questions about firing Tito? Or okay. How many you got there? You're probably about, if you got five, there's probably four of them about firing Tito, which I'm not even going to entertain any of those. But whatever you got, let's fire away.
Yeah, we got one from Joel Brown, who said is it time for a blockbuster trade? They've got a lot of starting pitching. Why not trade for some outfield help? A guy like Trevor Bauer, his value is never going to be higher. He's not going to sign a multi-year deal here. So why not make a deal for him?
I think the future for Trevor Bauer with the Indians will probably involve a trade when they finally do go their separate ways. It'll involve something via trade, but I think they're at least going to try and get a year or two more out of him, at least one more year out of him.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how many. Has he got 4 years?
He's got two more years of arbitration.
Okay.
So this year he's going to make a significant.
Yeah, he's going to go up to about $11 million this year.
Yeah, he's going to well deserved significant raise. I mean, number two in the AL in ERA. Top 10 in strikeouts. He is easily a top 10 pitcher in the league right now. And he's going to make that money in arbitration. Yes, his value is very high, but his value is also to what the Indians want to accomplish.
Yeah.
I mean, he makes the rotation what it is. So, who the Indians are right now.
Yeah, and I mean, he's pitched well, and he's said, and he's on record as saying he's never going to sign a multi-year deal for the rest of his career. He's going to go 1 year at a time.
I think the story about that is hilarious too. The reason that he's never going to sign a multi-year deal is because then his friend gets to punch him in the face or something.
No, he shoot him in the
rear end with a paintball gun.
The other side of the rear.
Oh, jeez.
With a paintball gun.
Well, I would have taken the rear end
in the groin.
Wow. Well. That's a good motivation.
I was wondering though, if his broken ankle, what he had, would change his mind. I mean, a career goes by quickly and it's fragile, as even if you're a fanatic and you take care of yourself like that.
I agree. If that were an arm injury, then I would say, yeah. An arm injury might spook somebody into, changing your philosophy on signing a long-term deal. Again, that's sort of his quirky way of thinking. He wants to revolutionize the game and change the game.
Yeah.
We know he's on record about hating the MLB salary structure and the way that the teams are able to control players for as long as they are. And hell, if he were pitching 30 years ago or 40 years ago, it was way worse than it is right now, Trevor.
Exactly.
With the reserve clause, you had no options. At least this way, that the players are able to.
Yeah, the players got a pretty good deal right now.
Not anything. So we're just to sum up. Where do we stand on the whole trading Trevor Bauer thing?
I can't. I'm not going to trade Trevor Bauer unless I am forced into it by salary constraints. If if Paul Dolan comes to Chris Antonetti, goes, we got to move this guy. But other than that. You don't trade starting pitching. The last time they traded starting pitching was when, CC Sabathia and Cliff Lee and those guys, they were afraid they were losing money. Well, CC wasn't going to resign no matter what. Lee had a year left when they traded him, and that was because they thought they were losing money.
Well, he won the Cy Young. They were going to. So that there you go. If Trevor Bauer wins his first Cy Young, his first, because he says he's going to win multiple. If he wins his first Cy Young this season, then maybe the trade talk comes back into consideration. Yeah. What's next?
This is from John Kasinger from Stowe. What happened to Brady Aiken this year? It looks like he didn't pitch at all. And he didn't pitch at all. He Brady Aiken, their number one pick, I believe in 2015. Before that, he was the overall number one pick in all of baseball from Houston, I think, the year before. And he blew out his elbow.
Mm-hmm.
The Indians drafted him knowing he was coming back from Tommy John surgery. And 2 years ago, he finally pitched a full year at A-ball at Lake County.
And struggled.
But he made every start. But this past season, they kept him in extended spring and did not pitch him in a game. He threw bullpens. They're trying to increase his velocity. I don't know. It sounded. I'm not sure exactly. They just shut him down for a year and had him work on velocity, on pitches, on his delivery. And I am not sure. I'm not sure what the future holds for Brady. It's
unusual that he would not have at least progressed out of extended spring and gone to A ball or double A and try to do stuff in games. He's one of those, and he's also one of those like sort of unique personality type guys too. So who knows. What lies ahead?
Yeah,
there.
But I'm really interested to see what he can do this spring. The next season, if this route of conditioning will work for the Indians, or he's done. I would have to think his career is in jeopardy right now.
Okay.
This is a guy from Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh man.
Do you think we could see Nick Sandlin in the bullpen at some point in 2019?
Well, he did progress rapidly, real quickly from Arizona to.
I think he went and reached double A ball.
He got to Akron. Wow!
So he jumped four levels, maybe five, because he didn't even pitch in the New York Penn League. Mm-hmm. He went from the Arizona Rookie League to Lake County to Lynchburg, which is high A, mm-hmm. and then to double A. And so, second round pick, kind of funky motion, sidearm guy.
And that's the thing. They've got Adam Simber.
Yeah.
Who's a young guy, who's a submarine guy, who's a matchup ready guy, who Tito talked about in the season wrap up interview about, him being a piece moving forward that they're going to sort of rely on, and seeing him getting more full innings as opposed to just coming out and pitching to one or two guys, and that might sort of trigger a renaissance for him, getting him back to where he was when he was pitching with San Diego and taking on full innings. But if you've got Adam Simber there,
I don't know how similar those guys are. Yeah,
maybe you can wait a couple of years, at least a year on. Now, if Adam Simber just comes out and is a total train wreck, you've got options and you've got control of him that you can send him back down and let him work on things in Columbus. And if Sandlin proves himself, then he takes that spot.
Yeah.
But I think
Simber's kind of extreme. He comes from down under.
Yeah.
I think Sandlin's more sidearmer, three-quarter. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but who knows? I don't. So you got two righties that are kind of the same guy.
What's Sandlin's velo? What's his?
I think he throws. I think he's in the 90s, but I'm the low 90s. But I'm not sure. I wouldn't bet on that.
And that's about what Simber is.
I mean, if
one of them is like one of those guys that comes out of the Tampa Bay pen throwing 95 and just smoke, I think then maybe you bring him up. But if you've got Simber here, I think you're going to roll with Simber and let Sandlin sort of progress before Simber makes you have to make a decision on Sandlin.
Here's this is from Tim Casper from Canton. I may have missed this, but is anyone connecting the departure of Mickey Callaway as pitching coach to the Tribe's pitching woes, especially in the bullpen this year? I don't know. They're kind of pointing a finger at Carl Willis. But the starting pitching was fine.
I was going to say the rotation was one of the best in baseball.
Yeah.
I think there was number two rotation
to Houston. So it's hard to argue with that. You've got a 20 game winner that's in contention for his third Cy Young and Corey Kluber. The bullpen was not good. It was a mess. So
And don't you have a bullpen coach that you could pin that on?
And I think
Scott Atchison, who they elevated. They intentionally, kept him around because they didn't want to lose him because he was a guy who they think very highly of, so they let Jason Bure move on. He was the bullpen coach
when they had the second best DRA and
So I don't know.
I think that's hard to point at a coach, especially you know, when you've got one of the best rotations in the big leagues, and like you said, Joe, the pitching coach is usually works not exclusively, but spends most of his time with the rotation.
Right. Yeah, I think if you're going to ask that question, scratch out Mickey Callaway's name and put in Jason Bray, and maybe that question makes a little more sense.
Okay, one more here. This is right up your alley here. Yeah, this is David Frederick from St. Augustine, Florida. Given the way starting and relief pitchers are used now, how about getting rid of all the five full innings? How about getting rid of the five full innings that a starter needs to classify for a win, or a pitcher needs to classify for a win?
Yeah, I think we've already moved away from placing a high value or a high importance on the number of wins for you know who's trust me, pitchers that are going to make the most in free agency this year aren't going to be the pitchers that had the most wins. It's going to be the versatile, hard throwing relievers who come out and can give you a stretch of innings and change a game for you that way and win a game for you, but not necessarily under the rules of statistics, you know, earn a win. You saw what Kevin Cash did with the opener strategy in Tampa Bay this year, and you're going to see a lot more of that. How many of these four-hour World Series games that we're, you know, that we're going to be enjoying over the next couple of days are going to be won by the starting pitcher? None of them are. And if they are, it's going to be because a team jumped out to a four-run lead early and held on. And I could even make you the case. I could argue the case that it wouldn't be because the starting pitcher did as much as the bullpen did in that case. So I'm all for changing the rule that says a starting pitcher can only earn a win if he goes five innings. I'm for that. That's great.
But you've got 100 years of history.
God, the game's changing. What?
But
the game is different.
Is this just
100 years?
Is this just like a small sample size? I mean, 10 years from now, what if all of a sudden the trend of baseball goes back to we want 20 game winners? We want guys that pitch 200
and
innings.
I would say to that, the Players Association is probably pretty happy that as many middle relievers and setup guys got as many big contracts in the offseason as they did. And it's based on this whole trend that those are the guys that you place your value on. And so those are the guys you're going to pay, right? I'm not saying starting pitchers aren't going to make their $20 million or whatnot, but if you're starting to get bigger contracts for those guys, then...
I don't know. I mean, it's always been a star. Stars drive the game. Who's a middle reliever? Who's a star among the middle
relievers? Is Josh Hader not a...
Yeah, but he's a kind of a late-inning guy.
He's a racist, but I'm not going to... Whatever. He's a star for a different reason. Some of those guys are...
And that thing... But that worries me because relievers flame out so fast, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, starting pitcher, a guy like Kluber, a guy like Chris Sale, you know... Those guys stick around. I don't know. It's an interesting argument. I don't know if you can. I mean, really, what are all those guys in the Hall of Fame? I know they don't care. They're in the Hall of Fame, but what are they going to say? What's Gaylord Perry going to say who pitched like close to 250, 270 innings, mm-hmm. won 20 to 25 games a year? All of a sudden, the win is reduced to what, 4 innings, 3 innings? If what's the qualification? I don't know if you can mess with it.
And then you give all the power in that regard. You're giving power over guys' salaries ostensibly to Bob Maver. The official scorer would be the guy who then determines, you know, who pitched effectively enough to win a game.
Right.
Think about the power that the official scorer would then wield.
Then you got
to think about like changing the requirements for what an official scorer or who can be an official scorer. I mean, think about the power that you would be giving them.
Oh my God! I didn't even think about that. It's an interesting argument.
You hear that, Maver? I'm just saying. But again, I think give it a couple of years. Okay, if you're worried about sample size, give it a couple of years and let's see where the trend goes. And if it stays this way,
I think
then you got to consider it.
That's good compromise.
Don't make a rash, you know, change because you see the way it's going. If it's only going to come back around the other way, hell, maybe there's, you know, a whole crop of big hosses are coming up that can throw, you know, 250 innings and be that effective, but and not break down as starting pitchers. So who knows? All right, we've reached the end of the question and answer session. We're getting up against it. I just wanted to bring up sort of the highlight of the ALCS and the championship series round. For us, as you know, guys who follow the Indians on a daily basis, was seeing Trevor Bauer in a suit in the Major League Baseball Network studios analyzing games between the Red Sox and the Astros. First of all, it was hilarious to see Trevor Bauer sitting there straight-faced complimenting the Astros.
Yeah.
You know, almost through his teeth as well-deserved for their performance.
Right.
But to hear Trevor Bauer compliment Gerrit Cole on his performance was just hilarious. What did you make of Bauer's stint as a network analyst for Major League Baseball?
I loved it. I thought he did a great job. I really liked his breakdown on how Machado, Manny Machado owns him. And, it, you know, he was showing, you know, kind of like was... You know, there was no self-consciousness. He just said, this guy owns me. And they went through the pitch by pitch on different at-bats and, you know, what he did to try to beat him. And he just said Machado just kind of wore him out. And I thought that was very revealing, very, you know, just self-effacing. You know, I thought it was, and it was informative. It was, you know, you learned something.
Yeah, I mean, he really sort of demonstrated that he could... If pitching ended for him tomorrow, he could actually be a really good network analyst or a guy. Now, other personality traits and you know flaws or whatever notwithstanding, because what we didn't see in that was anybody talking about drones or anybody talking about you know sticky substances or anything like that. He really sort of didn't get his dander up.
Yeah.
But in that setting, they had the reins were kept tight, and he was excellent.
I think Trevor, to me, he's got plans beyond baseball. Mm-hmm. Don't you think? I don't know if he's going to take his clothing, his clothing apparel with that little image of him with the Bauer blade.
Yeah,
the stick. I don't know what the...
But I mean, it makes sense. He's trying to change things. He's trying to do things that nobody else has done before. And you got to give him credit for that. Whether or not the delivery is you agree with, right, wrong, or indifferent, and the way he's been gaslighting fans and followers on Twitter for the last couple of days has really been interesting.
That's part of it I don't get, but I don't know. I don't think he needs to do that. But
well, and that's our own personal opinions about that. We can't say one way or another. And, you know, until it makes headlines, which it did before last season. You know, and when you're going at your own teammates with you know stuff about politics and things like that, there's no place for that, I don't think. But again, he's building his brand, and I think, like you said, beyond baseball or when his playing days end, I think there's something to it. He could be, you know, what the really interesting thought would be with all of these camps and academies and places to train and whatnot, and he's giving. I've seen him on Twitter giving training tips and advice to kids. He could be making a whole army of Trevor Bauer clone. Like you think about it, a bunch of 12-year-old kids who are Trevor Bauer clones coming up through the ranks, you know, in a couple of years, and that could be his master plan. Yeah. Who knows?
Who knows, man? I mean, it's worked so far. It's worked so far.
The look on Hoynsie's face right now is it's priceless. All right, guys. That'll about do it for us this week. We've got to get out of here, but stick with us. As heck, if the Red Sox and Dodgers wrap up here in the next couple of days, you know, then the real fun starts. 5 days after that is when
That's right.
the whole thing gets rolling. So we will talk to you then.